The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but lately you look at the state of the world and you feel like you're living in the twilight zone. Actually, that's become a very familiar phrase, very overused phrase. Seems like we're living in the twilight zone. Well, my friend, as you probably know, there was once a classic television anthology series called The Twilight Zone. And while technically it was science fiction, the program was actually a vehicle for commentary on the conditions of the world, human nature, life itself. My friend Jim Barry and I have made reference to the series often, and the last time over the air we found ourselves doing so, we thought it would be fun to dedicate an entire program to The Twilight Zone. Well, this is that special Twilight Zone episode of The Bob Siegel Show. Please welcome back Jim Barrier.
You're traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
Okay, here we are on the other side. Thank you, Brennan, for great work on the intro there.
I really don't think there's anything Rod Serling had in any episode of The Twilight Zone that's more bizarre than what's actually going on in real life today in America or anywhere in the world for that matter.
Well, I agree with what you're saying. And what I had in mind tonight, and I know you guys are all going to jump in with this, but some of those episodes, as you pointed out, he was addressing social issues, but he disguised it through fantasy sci-fi so that he could get away with it, or he would have been censored half the time.
Yeah, and it's very much like Gene Roddenberry followed in his footsteps just a few years later when we got toward the middle, late 60s with Star Trek. Very similar. In those days, you just weren't allowed to say those things on television, but they got away with it because they were calling it science fiction.
Yeah, and Roddenberry did the same thing. He wrote a lot of the episodes of Half Gun Will Travel, by the way, you know, with Wire Paladin, you know. So it's that's what they had to do in those days. We are back to a time now where you can get censored and canceled if you're not careful, if you don't say the politically correct things. But I thought it'd be fun to take a look at a few of the episodes. Most of them, I think our audience will remember. I know you'll remember these. But then let's take a look at how they apply to what's going on today. And so I'm going to start with the one, whenever I do Twilight Zone stuff in an open forum, if I'm in a group or people are just talking about it, the most popular episode over the years that I've heard people immediately think of was an episode called To Serve Man. You remember that one?
Yes, where the aliens keeps claiming they're here to serve man, but they mean serve man on a silver platter to other aliens.
And that's right. And it was interesting, the Canemites, they were all played by one actor because he was really tall, and that was Richard Kiel. You might remember him. He played Jaws in a couple of 007 movies.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. He was actually a born-again Christian. He, in fact, it was before you were there, but when I was there, he came one time and spoke at Skyline. You know, he was this member of an alien race, and they come to Earth, and they promise to end hunger and energy shortages and the arms race.
Well, I guess if you're not going to be alive anymore, you don't get too hungry. So that's how they ended hunger.
Don't spoil the ending.
Well, I think we spoiled it already.
Spoiler alert.
But now, there's nobody that already follows Twilight Zone that doesn't know the ending to that episode.
Everybody knows that. And so there's a couple of cryptographers who are trying to decode this book called To Serve Man. And pretty soon the humans are volunteering to go on trips to the aliens' home planet, which has been described as a paradise. The armed forces is no longer necessary because they have established world peace, and everything is wonderful here. People are signing up to go to this planet, and Michael Chambers, the main cryptographer, is getting ready. It's his day to get on a spaceship and go to Cannabis Planet, and his assistant, Patty, comes running out, and she's screaming, "Mr. Chambers, don't get on the ship! Don't get on the ship to serve man! It's a cookbook!" And everybody remembered that. It was so ironic. And I've thought about that, and this is what I have come up with, and we're going to let everybody kind of offer thoughts on this, but to serve man was a great analogy. It was a great description of today's United States government. They are elected to serve us, but instead they're consuming us. They promise to fix all of our problems, when in reality, what they represent is our greatest danger. And it was pretty relevant.
Yeah, they've fixed us all right. They've fixed us really good.
Yeah, they serve us. And because we use that term, people are elected to serve, right? They're supposed to be our servants. And in fact, it seems like they want to be our masters. And there's a lot of crazy stuff going on today. So let me ask you, do you have a favorite episode?
I was thinking about it today, and usually with a TV show, even one that I love, I can think of a few clunkers. I probably haven't seen every single Twilight Zone episode, but honestly, I could not think of one that I did not like. Some of my absolute favorites, The Serving Man was one of them. The one where...
Yeah.
Where I guess it was three astronauts returned from a mission, and then one at a time they disappeared. And not only did they disappear, but history had no memory of them. I don't know if you remember that one. There was another one where I believe it was a lady and some aliens had crashed in her barnyard, I guess. And
I think they were
tiny aliens. And then didn't it turn out at the end that the tiny aliens were really American astronauts and she was a giant or something like that? There was another one. I think he did that theme twice. I think there was another one where somebody went to a planet and he was the giant. And then
it was the little people.
Yeah,
that was the one.
And then
where...
didn't he go to another planet at the end?
Hey,
and
he was
the little person at the end or something like that. Yeah, the four people that were trapped in this room, and it turned out they were four toys inside of a toy box. So the one with Burgess Meredith, where they were the last couple of guys on Earth, and he was delighted because he only wanted to be by himself and read, and then suddenly stepped on his reading glasses. So he's all by himself in the library, and he can't read anything. So anyway, those are some of them. But honestly, unlike other movies and shows, I have not prioritized these. So I'll let you and Brendan do the heavy lifting with your top 10 lists, but those are at least some of the ones that would certainly be on mine somewhere.
I don't know that I'll be able to get through 10 of them. I have a few. And again, because from my perspective tonight, I'm trying to talk about episodes that are very culturally relevant today. Brendan, you told me that you had not only your favorite, but you also have some of the ones that you really didn't like, that you thought were clunkers.
Do you want
to share anything?
Sure. I can do it like one at a time, because I only found five episodes really that... make it a top 10 would stretch it, but five episodes was easy enough to make. So starting off my list at number five is The Bard.
These are your favorites or your least
favorites? Least favorites to start things off. Yeah. It's about a TV writer who is struggling to come up with original ideas for a TV show. So he does black magic to bring back William Shakespeare to steal some of his ideas. Eventually, William Shakespeare hears about this and he gets upset and he goes off into society. Meanwhile, the TV producers are like, "We love this show. We want you to do an episode about American history." And so he's like, okay. So he conjures up at the very end of the episode some very famous American history people, such as George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Pocahontas, and so on and so forth. So in the end, he gets what he wants in the end. And unfortunately, that's not opposite of what Twilight Zone is supposed to be.
No, I have never seen that. Now, Brendan, you said there were several incarnations of this. This was from the original one?
This is from the original.
I do not remember that one.
Yeah, that was from the last season.
Was the last season where they starting to lose it a little bit by the last season?
Yeah, everyone agrees that at season four, CBS said, "We love this show so much that we want you to do an hour's worth of TV."
And it was amazing what he was able to get into a half hour. You thought you saw a whole movie in that half hour because it was so tightly and superbly written. So I could see how getting a whole hour, then you stretch it out, you pad it out, and you lose the quality.
I couldn't agree more. There's so many of the early episodes where I'm like, this could be a perfect movie here for sure. There's an episode about a Western of a guy who's drunk, and he's now very good at shooting guns again when he used to not be back in the day. And if they were able to stretch that out into a movie, I bet it would be one of the most memorable and really, really well done movies. I have to look up what the name of the episode is again, but it's from the first season, and it's really, really well done too. So an interesting thing, Burt Reynolds was in that episode. He was the main character. So you get to see a very young Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, that is another interesting thing about that series is some people that went on and became very famous. There was an episode with Robert Redford where he was the Grim Reaper. Of course, the famous William Shatner episode where he's on the plane. And then another series that happened too, which I loved a lot, was the Outer Limits. That was very similar to The Twilight Zone. I remember they had an episode with Robert Duvall. So a lot of those early anthology series started some. But anyway, continue with your list.
Yeah. So now we're at number four. From the first season, it's The 16 Millimeter Shrine. It's about this actress who becomes old, and now she's playing more older women type parts, and she doesn't like that at all. She wants to go back to how she was back in the day, where she was the young, always being fawned over kind of actress. And so I didn't like it personally because it was more of a soap opera episode, it felt like, and then they threw in a Twilight Zone kind of spinoff at the end. So unfortunately, that one didn't really hit for me. And a lot of the movie reminded me, I don't know if you remember this movie, Mommy Dearest.
I only recognize the title. I've never seen it.
Yeah, if you can try to explain it, Jim. I forgot what the name of the actress is.
Hey, if he could explain Miss American Pie, the song, he can explain anything.
Exactly.
Oh, man. By the way, that was Ida Lupino in the Twilight Zone episode. And Crawford. Yeah, that's Joan Crawford.
Okay. Joan Crawford. Okay.
It took me a second. Okay. Well, keep going.
All right.
We're doing good here.
Well, I did, while we were sitting here talking, my favorite episode did occur to me. I actually mentioned it in passing a couple of weeks ago, but I'll mention it again when we return. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show special Twilight Zone edition.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back. to 96.1 FM, 1170 AM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. The Bob Siegel Show's theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today, we're doing a pop culture edition going through the Twilight Zone. I'm joined with co-host Jim Barrier and my producer, Brendan Thomas, who's very opinionated about the arts. We're in the middle of Brendan going through his five worst episodes of Twilight Zone, and then he was going to move on and go to some of his favorites. Take it away, Brendan.
All right. So now we're at number three here. This is the episode called The Lonely. It's from the first season. It's about a guy who is banished to an asteroid in space in the future because he committed homicide. But apparently it was because of self-defense. So he's very, very lonely on this asteroid. And every 4 months, a crew comes over to bring stuff to him, such as things to make him stay alive with food, water, or equipment for a car to build because he needs time to pass. But this last trip that they come over, they bring a robot woman over to keep him company. And in the end, like you said, because it's a 30-minute episode, everything kind of moves in a pretty...
I remember that now. I remember the robot woman.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunately, in my opinion, this is one of the controversial ones because it seems like everyone really loves this episode and they were very heartbroken by the end. I kind of predicted it, but then again, it was the 1950s/60s. Everyone's kind of new to this whole television
thing. Well, I'm one of three people in the country that hated the movie Forrest Gump. So you're in good company for diverging from the crowd.
You don't like the scene where he runs on the memorial pond there?
Well, I thought it was just as stupid as all the other scenes in the movie.
Oh, man. Oh, we're going to have a whole show on that one. Then.
Okay. No, don't tempt me. Don't make me go there.
All right. Anyway, so I just felt like nothing really happened in the whole episode. Like, I don't think he really changed his personality from point A to point B. I'm trying to not spoil too much in the episode, unlike you guys who want to just spoil. Hey, by the way, it's a cookbook. Oh, no.
Well, you know, Twilight Zone fans have already seen all of these, and those that aren't Twilight Zone fans might get intrigued, and by the time they actually watch it, maybe they will have forgotten.
To be fair,
that's how we can rationalize giving all these spoilers.
Exactly. And to be fair, you haven't spoiled the entire thing. Like, there's a lot of foreshadowing in that episode that you guys were talking about that I really, really enjoyed. So I won't try to spoil too much again, but that's just another example.
Just tell us.
Yeah, no, I won't. No. Number two.
I know what happened.
Oh, I know. Number two, this one's a very, very controversial one, too. I have Kick the Can. It's about...
I used to love playing that game when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The Can was one of the most fun games in the world.
Yeah, it's about five seniors who go to a retirement home, and they feel like they're going to be... basically, when you go, or senior home, excuse me, and you know what happens usually when you are sent there, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So they want one more chance to feel younger again. Well, it turns out that when they play the game Kick the Can, as they did as a kid, they actually start to get younger and younger and younger, and they can relive their life again by doing so. Unfortunately, I never really got into that episode. It never really spoke to me, but maybe as I get older, I'll start appreciating it more.
Was it a play on words? They were kicking the can instead of kicking the bucket?
Exactly. Something like that. Yeah.
There you go.
And then the last one I have here, and everyone agrees this is one of the worst ones. This is from the last season again. It's I Dream of Jeannie, which is about this guy who is in love with his coworker, and he wants to try to make her fall in love, and he finds a magic lamp, and so he gets the genie to grant him the wish to have this girl fall in love, but he slowly figures out like he doesn't want to be.
Did Barbara Eden play the part of the genie?
I gotta look that up again, but I don't believe so.
Probably not.
No, it felt more of a comedy. It didn't feel like a science fiction or horror or any Twilight Zone episode for that matter. So unfortunately, and again, because it's 1 hour long, and you know the actual show itself is like I dream
of
Genie.
Very common. The last season in the original Star Trek season 3 is known as the worst season.
But
Lost
there's some
in Space
good episodes.
Was only good in season 1. Seasons 2 and 3 were horrible of Lost in Space. But that's very common in television series.
They run out of ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, I mostly blame CBS again because there was no need to make it an hour-long series after that. You were just trying to get money for
money,
it.
Yeah, when money becomes the motive rather than art, then the art always suffers.
Right. So there are my top five worst episodes. The Bard.
Top five worst.
The Bard, the 16 millimeter shrine, The Lonely, Kick the Can, and I Dream of Jeannie.
Okay, so your favorite episodes, yeah. Brendan?
All right, so I have a lot of honorable mentions. I'll try to save them for the end. So we'll start with number 10, and if you guys want to discuss about it, you can. Number 10 is One for the Angels. This one, I don't think it's enough credit, in my opinion, of how good it is. It's about, I forgot the name of the actor. He's been in the series so many times, too, but he's a salesman, and so he's lived his life without any really recognition, or I would say like any purpose to it, really. And all of a sudden death comes knocking at his door. Literally, it knocks on the door and there's death for him. And he's like, I'm gonna take you out.
Is this the one where Robert Redford played the Grim Reaper? Or
I don't remember.
Well,
I think
that was a woman dying in the Robert Redford episode.
I think Okay. So this one's different. But anyways, so he decides that, the death character tells him, hey, at midnight I'm gonna take your soul. And from there are some stipulations where I won't take your soul, however. And one of those stipulations is if he could find out how he can have a purpose in life. And he says, I want to make a pitch that's one for the angels, one that the heavens will sing and say, wow, that was an amazing pitch, basically. But he tricks him by saying that he was going to do it. But he's like, you know what? I'm going to wait another like 5 years, maybe 10 years till that happens. That way I can live as long as I can. And of course, death did not appreciate that. So what he does is he puts this little girl, like his neighbor's little girl or something, like he really cares for the kids in the neighborhood. He puts this little girl in a car accident, unfortunately. And so she gets into a coma, and he says, at 11:30 I'm taking her soul then instead of yours, if that's the case. And so it's a very in the end, this is sort of a spoiler if I say this part, but it's a very happy episode. This is one of the rare Twilight Zone episodes where there's actually a happy ending to it all. And for a happy ending Twilight episode, it really touches my heart, and I think it was really well done and well put together. So if you guys ever check it out, I think it's very underappreciated. One for the Angels is my number 10 pick. So there you guys go.
Hey.
All right. Do you want me to go to number 9?
Go ahead. Go do a few more years, and then we'll let Jim get started on his.
Absolutely. Okay, so number 9. This is a classic episode, The Dummy. I will admit, the first time I actually heard this kind of story was actually through Goosebumps, if you remember those books with R.L. Stine and all that.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very similar one where the dummy starts speaking without the ventriloquist at all, and he starts making threats to the crowd and stuff like that. Very
scary.
Yeah, it's very, very well done if you ever get the chance to watch that. And I will throw number 8 in there because Jim's actually going to talk about this episode here. It's A Good Life. I think you're going to... Are you talking about this episode, Jim?
Yeah, and that's one of Bob's favorites, I think. We will talk about that.
All right.
Well, I'm not recognizing... I may know the episode and not the title.
So this one's... about a child who has powers where he can...
Oh, Billy Mummy wishing people to the cornfield?
Yep,
that's the one.
I don't know if it was a favorite episode or a frustrated. The very idea of some snotty, spoiled little kid having that much control. It's very... Very frustrating.
It was kind of scary too.
That was horror at its finest on television.
Yeah.
He was a good little actor, though, Billy Mummy. He did a lot of things before he did Lost in Space, that being one of them.
I can probably tell how Jim's going to like try to spin this around to make it very political in a way.
Can you?
I can. I think the evil child kind of represents probably, if I had to guess, government or maybe a certain president, possibly too,
or just about everybody in Congress.
Oh, no, I got another twist for you, but keep going with your list. This is fun.
So number 8 would be It's a Good Life. Moving on quickly to number 7. We talked about this episode too, Bob and I. The Living Doll.
Yes.
Classic episode. Yes. I think in terms of production for prop-wise, it's really impressive how they're able to... There's a scene specifically where he puts the doll onto a table saw and he's trying to cut it and sparks are flying. And then when you lift it up, there's no damage to the doll at all. I think in terms of prop work, and especially in the 50s and 60s, that's really, really impressive. And again, a classic episode. So if you ever get the chance, I believe this show is actually on both Peacock, and I watched it on Netflix as well, but they don't have season 4 on there. So just a heads up, but there's not really much in terms of season 4 episodes that I could say I can go back to anyways. And then moving on to number 6. And again, Jim's going to talk about this a little later on. It's The Obsolete Man. And I know you probably...
Well, that's my favorite one ever.
That is a fantastic episode. Yeah. I love just specifically the dialogue. Like, this is really, really well put together. together dialogue, and you can see how both sides make sense in terms of like a strong dictatorship and then a guy who's trying to uprise against this dictatorship. Very, very well done in terms of writing dialogue, for that matter.
Yeah.
Number five, again, Jim's going to talk about this episode. I have a lot of ones that Jim's going to talk about, apparently. The Eye of the Beholder is that number five.
Well, that was real popular.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Is that the one with the woman who wasn't good looking and they found out that she was on a planet?
Donna Douglas.
Very, very well done.
The woman who played Ellie May on The Beverly Hillbillies.
That's right. So the last thing I'll say, because I know we got to get to commercial again because I'm wasting a lot of time. I'm so sorry about that. In terms of lighting and camera work, this is the best episode of The Twilight Zone you'll ever have to watch.
Yes,
in terms
because
of production.
You never got a good look at those faces till the end of the
exactly.
episode.
Exactly. So that's my number five choice, and I know we'll get to the top four here shortly.
Okay.
So.
All right. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, and today we are talking about the Twilight Zone. We'll continue to listen to Brendan Thomas finish his top 10 list, and we'll move on to Jim Barrier's favorites.
I am so sorry I'm taking up so. This is the Brendan Thomas show, apparently.
Yes,
today.
Well, it's okay.
It's okay.
Okay, so now we're at number four. Again, this is an episode Jim's going to talk about. Time Enough at Last. This is actually the very, very first episode of The Twilight Zone my parents ever showed me in my life. So it's always held a special place in my heart. It's always touched me every time I've watched that episode. So again, we'll talk about it more into detail later on in the episode or of the Bob Siegel Show, not the Brendan Thomas Show, because again, this is not mine. And now we're at number three. We talked about this episode earlier, five characters in search of an exit. I think in terms of a plot twist, this is the best plot twist you'll ever
watch. This is the title of the one about the toys in the box?
That's correct. Yeah. Oh, again, stop spoiling.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the toys in the box earlier. It's
okay.
Just I tend to know them by the stories. I haven't memorized all the titles.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So. Yeah, it's a classic for sure. Number two, Walking Distance. This one really, really touched me watching it for the first time. About this guy who goes back to his hometown, and he realizes when he goes back to his hometown, he's actually going back in time to his actual childhood self. And it's an episode where the lesson, I'll let you know what the lesson is because you could probably guess what the lesson is based off of that, but they do it in such a very touching way where he's too focused on his past and he's got to worry about what's going to have to come in the future. Again, maybe, again, Jim can probably point out that's probably a political statement possibly, but who knows? And then finally, my number one episode, and again, we'll talk about it more into detail, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street.
Yeah,
absolutely great. Classic. I know the original message has to deal with the Red Scare at the time, where if you don't know what happened there in Hollywood, there was a list done by McCarthy, I think was his name, or who is the senator?
Senator McCarthy.
Yeah,
yes.
Senator
McCarthy.
Yeah. He put out a list of people who were Russian spies, and this list got bigger and bigger, especially in Hollywood with Hollywood writers. So this was the episode to kind of make a comment on that situation where people are pointing out that that person's an alien or that person's an alien. Or
yeah.
That. Yeah. So for that reason, I think it's very smart commentary, and I can't wait to see how Jim puts it into a modern perspective.
Arthur Miller did something very similar. He lived through the McCarthy era, the famous playwright Arthur Miller. Yeah. He wrote The Crucible about the Salem witch hunts.
Exactly.
But he was really talking about the McCarthy era in a way that he could get away with talking about. Well, my favorite episode was Talking Tina, the talking doll.
Evil doll.
Telly Savalas' daughter. My name is Talking Tina. I'm going to kill you. Just horrific episode. But I'd have to call that my favorite. I'll turn it over to you now, Jim.
Okay. Some of those were pretty creepy when I was, 10, 11 years old watching this stuff. And that my folks let me stay up and watch that is kind of scary. But so I'm just going to pick it up where you left off. Monsters on Maple Street, starring Claude Akins. Remember him? Played in a lot of Westerns and stuff. I found that to be an incredible likeness of what's going on right now. Now, of course, it's caused by aliens who manipulate the power in the neighborhood, but they cause chaos and paranoia. People are turning on each other. And to me, I thought about Portland and the riots and the unrest and all the blame shifting and all the things going on, the chaos in our streets that are caused by some other people in their ivory towers and their power. And I thought it was very relevant to today.
And it shows how when you generate fear, human nature is at its worst.
Yeah. I'm going to give some of the closing monologues on some of these shows, too. So at the end, we hear Rod Serling say, "The tools of conquest do not necessarily come with bombs and explosions and fallout. They are weapons that are simply thoughts, attitudes, prejudices that can be found only in the minds of men. For the record, prejudices can kill and suspicion can destroy, and thoughtless, frightened search for a scapegoat has a fallout of its own. For the children and the children of the yet unborn, and the pity of it is, these things cannot be confined to the Twilight Zone." The guy was a visionary.
Yeah, boy, what profound words for today.
Yeah. Eye of the Beholder, of course, with Donald Douglas is a great one. That's one of the famous ones because it was so visually stunning. And as Brandon said, the camera work was so great because they don't spring it on you till the very end, which is one of the great tools that they used, was waiting till the very end to give you this irony. And so it's actually this beautiful woman is the one considered ugly. But we live in a society that has a cosmetic fixation, to quote Randy Stonehill. We're so addicted to the outward appearance. And there's also an intolerance to nonconformity. At the end of that show, you can hear the leader of the state going on this speech about, she's exiled to a place where everybody else is ugly, that in the state, there has to be conformity, and she will no longer be trouble to the state because she's different. And I thought, wow, we're kind of in a time like this. Now, It's a Good Life, starring Billy Mummy. And I know you've talked about that one before, Bob. And it's scary. It was this creepy little kid who had powers, and he would banish people to this otherworldly cornfield if he wasn't happy with them, if they did things that he didn't approve of. And I thought he was the prototype of the woke generation and the cancel culture.
Yeah, because it is like a lot of little kids are just running the whole planet right now.
We're going to banish you. And I thought, that's exactly what's going on today. Yeah. And in those days, you could read Dr. Seuss and play with Mr. Potato Head and watch Pepe Le Pew on TV. But no, not today, because there is some immature, lightweight, snowflake, woke people who get offended. And so I thought that was a very timely one. Now, you mentioned one, and it's a great one. A lot of people remember Time Enough at Last with Burgess Meredith. He's the bookworm, Henry Bemis. And he drives everyone nuts because he loves to read. And he goes down, he works in a bank, he goes down to the vault to read on his break, and there's a nuclear war and everything is destroyed. He comes out and he realizes he's all by himself. He finds a library and he finally has all the books he can read.
And I was so happy for him. And then it had that ending.
And he bends over to pick up a book and drops his glasses and they shatter.
Wow.
That was so Twilight Zone. I mean, it's just, you have the happy ending, all of a sudden it's a tragedy. And they just love to do that to you, manipulate your emotions. Now, that was not my favorite. My favorite was one that Burgess Meredith starred in that Brendan mentioned, The Obsolete Man. He played Romney Wordsworth, who lived in this future totalitarian state and was a bookkeeper. And not only that, he believed in God. And those were both crimes punishable by death. So he is rendered obsolete. And he is given the opportunity to choose his own form of death. And so he says he wants to be granted a personal assassin who will be there and the only one that will be involved in his death. And it's going to be televised nationwide. So they bring a television camera into his study, and he's there. And the chancellor, who's the one that's banished him and claimed he's obsolete, comes in unaware that Wordsworth has decided that he's going to die by a bomb. And the door is locked, and the chancellor's trapped in there with him. And as the time starts ticking away, here's Wordsworth, and he's just as calm as can be. And he's reading from a hidden copy of the Bible that he has. He's reading Psalm 23 and Psalm 59 and expressing his trust in God. And the chancellor's going nuts. And he says, in the name of God, let me go. And Wordsworth says, all right, under those terms, I will. He unlocks the door. Wordsworth goes out. The bomb goes off. And the Burgess Meredith character is killed. The chancellor now goes back, and he's considered obsolete because he gave in and he acknowledged God. Here's the closing narration. Isn't that awesome? Here's the closing narration. The chancellor, the late chancellor, was only partly correct. He was obsolete. But so is the state, the entity he worshipped. Any state, entity, ideology becomes obsolete when it stockpiles wrong weapons, when it manipulates territories but not minds, when it enslaves millions but convinces nobody, when it is naked yet it puts on armor it calls faith, while in the eyes of God it has no faith at all. Any state, any entity, any ideology that fails to recognize the worth and dignity and the rights of man, that state is obsolete, a case to be filed under M for mankind in the Twilight Zone. Sterling said those things. Isn't that awesome? That's my favorite episode ever.
And, he was a brilliant visionary.
Yeah. But he did an awful lot, and we talked about a few of them tonight. He did a lot of writing, most of the writing of these shows, and a lot of the shows would talk about spiritual things. They talked about heaven and hell. They talked about angels. And in this case, talked about believing in God and reading the Bible and those things. And maybe even in those days, it was hard to get away with that. But because of the vehicle he used, he was addressing real issues. That one, for me, wins the prize because it just represents right where we're at right now. We have a state that does not want to recognize the true God. They will use words, and they'll talk about freedom and religion and anything but Jesus, right? You can talk about anything but Jesus in this.
That's where society. We're fast heading toward. Okay, we'll be back for one more segment. You're listening to the Bob Segal Show special commentary on the classic television series, The Twilight Zone. Thank you.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here is another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. This is Bob Siegel with Jim Barrier and Brendan Thomas. Do both of you remember the episode with Sebastian Cabot where we thought he was an angel and he turned out to be the devil at the end of the episode? Do either of you remember that one?
That sounds familiar.
It was a convict, and he was in what he thought was paradise. He was surrounded by beautiful women. He fixed it so that every time he gambled or played the slot machines, he won. And even then, it got too predictable that he was winning. So Sebastian Cabot says, "Well, if you want, I can change it up for you a little bit." But at the very end, he realizes that he's in this place where he was given everything he's always wanted, and he's actually in hell. And Sebastian Cabot gives out this wicked laugh at the end. That's another one that's been very memorable to me.
And he did a lot of things about the devil and angels and heaven and hell, and that's a commentary in itself. That here's a guy who was, you know, a cutting edge writer and certainly not your typical representative of the Christian right. He was in the whole Hollywood thing. He's doing that stuff, and yet he had a basis in his field of knowledge that would acknowledge the spiritual things, that would acknowledge the scriptures and good and evil and those kind of things. What he did have a penchant for was being ironic, and at the very end there would be that twist where the bad guy was a good guy or vice versa, or what you think is paradise turns out to really be a torturous existence, those kind of things. But I think we could use some more writing like Serling's style that would prick our conscience, that would stimulate us, that would make us question what the norm is, what society is telling us is the norm, or what is right, or what is wrong. And he was kind of in the face of all of that, and that was back in the early 60s. Probably started late 59. But for those few years there, he was really challenging the norm. And he did it. It was so clever to do that through a medium that you couldn't really criticize. You could just say, no, this is just fiction. These are just fantasy stories. You know, what's your problem? But he really got his message across well. I think what we have today, people are afraid to think critically or speak critically or to say things that shake up the norm, the status quo. You don't want to offend people. You don't want to hurt people's feelings. And he wasn't afraid of any of that.
Well, and we need artists to take a stand. For example, the publishers, the owners of Dr. Seuss, when they wanted to cancel, they really put pressure on them to take some of these books off the market themselves. They should have said, no, we are not going to do this. This is stupid. We are drawing a line. There was nothing racist about this. And we are going to keep publishing them. And if you don't want them, don't buy them. And if you want to call us names or not sell them in your bookstores, you do what you want. You do what you need to do. We'll do what we need to do. We need people to develop that kind of spine.
And then on a comment on the whole social commentary on every episode, basically, of Twilight Zone, you're right. We don't have a lot of shows these days. They'll do it once in occasion, but not every single episode like he did at the time. So it's truly a revolutionary thing in television history.
Yeah, well, that was called the golden age of television for a reason. I guess he's kind of on the edge. The Twilight Zone of the golden age of television, they usually mean the 50s, but I would certainly count him as having in part of the classic golden age of television.
And the episode you were looking for, by the way, is a Nice Place to Visit. That was the name of the episode of the
the
one with Sebastian Cabot.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like you guys aren't as familiar with that one. Check it out; it's a fascinating episode. Kind of predictable.
It, yeah.
I saw it coming, but I still loved it.
I probably watched every single episode. It was a passion, and this probably explains some of why I'm the way I am. But I in those formative years growing up, I watched The Twilight Zone all the time. And I read Mad Magazine.
Oh, I loved Mad Magazine.
Yeah. And, you know, and they got away with stuff. You know why? They didn't have any advertisers. So there was no way to manipulate them. They just said whatever they wanted, and they didn't have any way for people to bully them. And of course, it's not what it was in those days. But in those days, they took pot shots at everybody. So I kind of grew up watching this, reading that stuff, and then graduated to H.G. Wells and Edgar Allan Poe and Jules Verne and that kind of stuff. So I've always kind of had a brain that doesn't operate in reality. I don't know.
Yeah, well, growing up as a kid, science fiction was always my favorite. But of course, we didn't have as much of it. There's so many science fiction movies and television shows now. I'm just kind of OD'd on it. But when it was rare, when a program like Twilight Zone or Star Trek or even the cheesier stuff like Lost in Space, Time Tunnel, it was so rare. You didn't have a lot of shows like that. So for me, it was a real special treat.
And you know, actually, Lost in Space, the first season was great, and then it got silly and cartoonish after the first season. And
yeah,
that was,
the fans
that was
felt
a
betrayed
back then.
Well, there was a reason for that. Batman premiered halfway through the first season of Lost in Space, and although Batman was very dark in the comic books, it was more reminiscent of the kind of Batman movies they're making now. But when the TV series came on, it was stupid,
it was
campy, the villains had these weird costumes, and it started clobbering Lost in Space in the ratings, so the producers of Lost in Space said, well, we'll make our stories silly and stupid, and the Lost in Space fans just felt absolutely betrayed, and it's really such a shame. But I agree, season one of Lost in Space, ironically, the season that was filmed in black and white, was a much better season.
Yeah. And Star Trek was the same way. It started off pretty good, but after a while they ran out of ideas, so they just kept doing the same kind of the same stories over and over again.
Well,
they do time travel and go back, you know.
Yeah, and Roddenberry got tired of NBC because, remember, they had canceled Star Trek, and then a letter writing campaign saved it. And this was before the internet. This was a snail mail letter writing campaign. Star Trek went back on the air, but then they canceled it again. And when he knew his days were over with season three, he admitted he just quit trying and just decided not to even care about the quality anymore. So he just cranked them out. And you could see it. There's a handful of good ones in season three, but for the most part. Anyway, back to our last few minutes of Twilight Zone. Brendan, Jim, any last thoughts on Twilight Zone?
I'll go first because I have some honorable mention episodes that I'll suggest to people. A Game of Pool. It's about a guy who is really, really good at the Game of Pool, and he wants like a real challenger. And a guy from who passed away, he's one of the best to ever play pool, comes down. He says, I'll challenge you. If I win, I get my life back. If you win, you are complete to say that you're the best pool player. It's a very, very well done episode. We talked about this earlier, The Little People, The Silence. That's the one where a guy talks so much and people are so annoyed of him that he gets secluded in a room. And if he talks for a whole month, I think, he loses out on like $1 million or something, which was a lot of money at the time. And the people that put the bet on him are trying to scare him to, like, you know, make sure that he actually speaks somehow so they can keep the money and all that. Very, very interesting episode. The only episode to be directed by a female is The Mask, which is about a family who goes to visit their dying father, and unfortunately basically they have to wear these masks that represent them, their true selves, which is greed, which is not nice.
I thought
basically
you were talking about COVID and the masks.
That's
the most horrific episode of Twilight Zone I've ever seen.
Something like that. Very quickly, because we're about to hit here, Escape Clause. It's about a guy who thinks he's sick and dying, but he's not, so he makes a deal with the devil to be indestructible. It's a very, very dark episode, but I couldn't help relate it to some Bible stories as well. I don't have time to get into it, but that's a very, very good one. And of course, The Hitchhiker, which is also another classic one where a female is driving from New York to LA and she keeps seeing the same hitchhiker on the road over and over.
I remember that one.
Yeah, very, very, and a cool plot twist at the end, I think, is very inspirational in today's movies for sure. And lastly, of course, I can't mention Nightmare on 20,000 Feet, of course, with William Shatner. Best acted episode ever, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Do you you have any quick honorable mentions, Jim?
Well, there was one, is a guy, he's an astronaut, and he crash lands, and he's on this planet all by himself, and while he's there, there's a nuclear war at home, so the Earth is destroyed, and he's by himself, and at the end, he stumbles upon this woman, and they begin to try to communicate, and her name is Eve, and...
Oh, boy, okay.
And Sterling comes on, it's kind of his, you know, what might have happened, you know, and here's a man and a woman now in this garden and they pick an apple from a tree. he was always using those kind of things to make pictures. But,
okay, well, we here at the radio don't have the luxury of what might have happened, only what's about to happen. What's about to happen is we are out of time. It was great, great subject, great talking about the Twilight Zone. I will see you next week, everybody, on The Bob Siegel Show.